Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Listeners, for the rest of the hour, we would like to take your calls and help analyze last night's first Democratic presidential debate. What stood out to you? Did you hear anything from the first 10 candidates last night that changed your mind? What's your biggest issue heading into the primary? Were the candidates talking about the right issues last night? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Joining us in studio for analysis is former Massachusetts representative and now the public affairs director for Foley and Lardner, Michael Capuano. Congressman Capuano, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Glad to be here again.
Also with us is Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester and an activist and organizer. Reverend Mariama, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
Congressman Capuano, I want to start with you. What stood out with you from last night?
Only a few things. In general, I think it was a pretty good first introduction to a lot of people. I don't know that there was any big winner or any big loser. I would have been surprised if there was. Hard to break through with 10 people. But overall, I actually think most of the candidates did pretty well by what they were trying to do. I'm sure that some of the lower numbered people would love to have broken through more, but they didn't do themselves any harm. Now, whether they got themselves into that next step up tier, that's probably not happening. So several things stood out to me, but I think when everything's said and done, I don't know that this debate will change much of what's already happened.
So several things stood out to you, but maybe didn't stand out in general.
Well, they didn't stand out in the way that was like all of a sudden there's an aha moment or there's something, oh my God, that person is no longer qualified or that person is now my candidate. I don't think some people could find some of those things, but those would be stretches as far as I'm concerned.
Reverend Mariama, how about you? Did you have the same reaction or different?
So I was undecided going in. I'm undecided still. I still think there's a long time and there's a lot to be seen. There were a couple little things. I mean, I think Mayor de Blasio did better than I would have expected. I kind of woke up this morning and still remembered a few things. And so I was like, that's interesting. Like, clearly he's made some level of impression that I've remembered it. But I don't think, you know, I was like, oh, and now I'm ready. You know, I still think, as Congressman Capuano said, you know, this was an introduction. And nobody flubbed, but also nobody blew me away.
So you said, Congressman Capuano, that it's hard to break through when there are 10 people on the stage. And of course, Reverend Mariama, part of the reason you haven't made up your mind is you only saw half of the 20, right?
I still know there were 10 more
exactly.
To go.
So it's a little bit unorthodox, this 10 candidates last night, 10 candidates tonight. They're chosen at random. But if you to take polling into account, then Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren was the only top tier candidate last night, which again was random, but striking. Mm-hmm. Was it good for her to be in that situation?
I think that my takeaway is that she held her own as sort of the commanding person. I do remember there was a moment where they said, well, do you have a plan for that? And she said, I do. And I think that her hashtag, she's got a plan for that, has been taking hold. And I think that she was able to maintain that. I did note she wore purple. And I think that actually, I know that that's not like that important. But I do think as a color choice, when you have 10 people up there, it actually drew my eye, which is, again, and I usually would hate to comment on what people are wearing. But I think when there's 10 people, it was a smart choice to do something that drew my eye away from a whole bunch of people that were wearing the same
color. Well, it may be that when there's 10 people, you got
to
distinguish yourself any way you can, right? So one of the other questions on my mind, Congressman, is it just too early? I mean, there's 20 people, but we're starting these debates. We are a long time from the first primary.
No, I don't think it's too early.
So how come?
Because as a lifelong Democrat, I believe we need to whittle the field down. Honestly, there of the 20 people up there, I know most of them. I think they're all pretty reasonably well qualified. There's reasons why they're on that stage, and there's reasons why they did reasonably well last night. They've done this before. They're all professionals, and they're thoughtful. So at some point, though, we can't have an election going in. I think it's very important to beat Donald Trump. I don't think we can have an election with 20 people that stay forever, and that's just a fact of life. So I think to get started now will help a lot of us Democrats slowly but surely start to whittle this field down to a more manageable size where many people can start saying, okay, I might have liked this other person better, but they were never going to break through, and so now I'm looking for the real choice that I have. So, no, I don't think it's too early at all.
Let's take a call. We've got Carolyn from Beverly on the line.
Hi, I'm a huge Elizabeth Warren fan, but I gotta say last night, Julian Castro absolutely broke through for me. After the debates, I turned off the TV, went online, bought a t-shirt, and donated $5. I'm really inspired by his specific policies on immigration and the way that he's influenced someone like Elizabeth Warren, who respects his expertise in that area.
So listeners, Caroline from Beverly says, somebody actually really stood out to me, Julian Castro in her case. Call and tell us what stood out for you, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to shift into policy in a second, but just quickly for either one of you, did anyone put significant distance between themselves and the other nine people on the stage last night? Just a quick yes or no.
A couple of specific items, I think some of which may become a real problem in the campaign at a later time for some people. Not too many, mm-hmm. but a couple.
Okay, I think I know where you're going, and we're going to come back to that in the policy section. How about you, Reverend Martin?
Well, I think given what Caroline said, I think the other thing is, and I watched with my family for the first hour, I pay a little bit more attention to this than the rest of the folks in my family, and for the first 10 minutes, they were like, who is this? Who is that? So I think for a lot of folks who have not broken through, they have not get a lot. You know, Elizabeth Warren has been in the media. There's a number of folks who've been getting free press. Those who had not finally got an introduction. And for people who care, people who are paying attention, yeah, they might go on their website and learn a little bit more about them. So I think, to be honest, that there are many of the folks who have not been as sort of touted might have some real opportunities. And the question is, how will they use this post-debate moment to see if they might be able to break through even more?
So let's talk about the policy now, the nuts and bolts. I want to welcome another voice into the conversation at this point. Tom Nichols is a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and at the Harvard Extension School. He's joining us now via Skype. Tom, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to be back with you, Tiziana.
Tom, what's your major takeaway from last night?
Well, first, important to say, I don't represent the government in any of this. My personal opinion is, first of all, that format was a nightmare. And so it's hard to talk about substantive points that any of the candidates made because that field should have been whittled down a lot earlier.
You think it should have been done before the debates?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are people there that are no-hopers that are, you know, running vanity campaigns. And, you know, if anything, we should have learned from what happened to the Republicans when you put 17 people on a stage.
The Republicans won after they put 17 people on the stage, Tom.
But they won with a terrible candidate, and it's possible that you're going to get another set of terrible candidates. I mean, it was, I think of 2016 as something of a fluke. And I think one of the reasons Trump was able to muscle his way through is that too many people were standing on stages trying to hold their fire for the people they thought were going to survive the process later in the year. And I think that's always dangerous because people don't really come out and give you what they're going to talk about. They're checking. They're trying to figure out who they can knock out. I think somebody had a great line about Julian Castro. He wasn't punching up or down. He was punching sideways to take out Beto, who I disagree with Congressman Capuano. I think Beto's gone after this. I think there are a lot of people that aren't going to really survive into late summer after this one. And I think the format had a lot to do with that. And I think it's also just too many people were there. And I think the headlines from last night, whatever we talked about last night, are going to be drowned out by an even greater number of top-tier folks. I mean, tonight you're going to have Harris, you're going to have Biden, you're going to have Buttigieg. We'll have forgotten that last night happened by Friday morning.
So I want to push us into the actual policy content of the debates now. Congressman, I'll come to you first. It did seem there were a couple of moments last night where we began to see real differences between the candidates. And the debate started with the economy. And I wonder if that's a smart place to focus for the party when, by many measures, the economy is actually doing pretty well. Polling shows most Americans, including Democrats, feel good about it. So was that a smart place to start?
That's up to the media choice. I mean, the candidates didn't make that choice. I think it's as good as any. I mean, Democratic idea of debates on the economy is not whether the economy overall is doing well. It's always been. It's not just new. But it's always been about when the economy, whatever it's doing, well or badly, who's getting the best impact, who's getting the worst impact. We're more about fairness than we are about the size of the pie. In that, again, generalization, but they think that's true, especially in a good economy. So it wasn't fine. I actually do think because there was few distinctions on the stage, it probably hung around a little longer than it probably should. It was a fair place to start as any. But it took a little bit too much time of the debate. I would have rather have more discussion on issues that they have more substantive disagreements on.
So
even if they
want
to nitpick the economy stuff, then get into the details.
Then get into the
generics
details.
Is one thing, but let's get into the details.
So to your point about the media being the place, the ones who chose where we started, they also chose who we started with,
That's
which
right.
was Elizabeth Warren. Much has been made of her kind of populist us versus them economic message, and she opened with it last night. Let's listen.
Who is this economy really working for? It's doing great for a thinner and thinner slice at the top. It's doing great for giant drug companies. It's just not doing great for people who are trying to get a prescription filled. It's doing great for people who want to invest in private prisons, just not for the African Americans and Latinx whose families are torn apart, whose lives are destroyed, and whose communities are ruined.
Listeners, let us know what you think of that and everything else you heard last night at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Reverend Mariama, is that a powerful economic message we heard from Elizabeth Warren last night, or do we need more details? Do we need to get down into the nitty-gritty?
I mean, I do think we need to get to the point of having much more detail. I think that that's an important piece. I think that the reality is when you have that many people on the stage and this early in, it's hard to get to that. I'm not sure that the American people would have wanted them to get down to that level of detail because people are still meeting these candidates. And I have to say, I want to give some credit to the host last night. I thought that they did an amazing job of corralling 10 people. I thought it was going to be a hot mess, to be honest with you. And I think, yeah, everybody didn't get that much time. But I do think some of the core messages came through. And I thought hers was one that other people also seemed to echo, and that resonates with people in my community. Yeah, the economy is better than it has been in its worst place, but there is wide disparities in how people are benefiting from it. I've got folks working jobs, living in homeless shelters. That feels fundamentally unfair and something that we need to figure out.
Sarah from Hingham has called in to tell us what resonated with her last night. Sarah, tell us what you called for.
Yes, thanks for calling. I agree with a lot of the previous commenters. The purple outfit was sartorially brilliant and politically savvy, right? I do think Julian did a great job totally playing the VP stakes a little bit between him and Cory Booker. And I thought that I thought the tone and tenor of the whole debate was very civilized. It was nice to see a woman standing in the middle of the stage. I don't think we'll see that tonight, but I really agree with you. The hosts were very focused, and it was just nice to see like a civic conversation with some substance, which frankly we haven't seen in years.
Sarah, thanks for that comment. The civic conversation with substance, it seemed to me that actually we got into some of that mm-hmm. in healthcare, mm-hmm. around healthcare policy. It was interesting that the only candidates, though, who backed tossing out private insurance entirely for public, because really the healthcare debate was about this tension. Mm-hmm. How much do we fund with private insurance? How much is publicly supported or publicly provided? Elizabeth Warren and Bill de Blasio were the only two of the 10 who said, hey, that's what I want to do. Did that surprise either of you?
Surprised me a little bit. I lived through the healthcare debate, and I always said that one of the mistakes Democrats made is all we ever talked about was the 15 to 20% of the people who did not have health insurance. We never talked about the 75 to 80% of the people who did, and for the most part, liked it. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't deal with the other 20%. It just means you got to acknowledge here we are. And it's the same thing here. Look, healthcare is a mess. We all know this. It's an impossible thing to deal with. We have to try to do our best. We have to do something. At the same time, people who have private health insurance, for the most part, are happy with it. Now, not everybody and not everything, and maybe we have to talk about how to adjust that to get everybody. But to tell 60 to 70% of the American people that they're going to have to change their health, and I will tell you, I may be the only person around, that I've been on both. I was required to be on Obamacare when I was in Congress, mm-hmm. and I was on Blue Cross before that, like every other federal employee, and I'm on Blue Cross again. And I will tell you, there is a significant, major difference to a consumer.
Yeah, there was kind of this moment last night. So Bill de Blasio had used the healthcare discussion to kind of say, hey, we got to go progressive. We have to go left. And then Representative John Delaney pushed back with variations on, hang on, if it isn't broken, don't fix it.
I think we should be the party that keeps what's working and fixes what's broken. I mean, doesn't that make sense? I mean, we should give everyone in this country health care as a basic human right for free, full stop. But we should also give them the option to buy private insurance. Why do we have to stand for taking away something from people? And also, it's bad policy.
I want to put both Tom and you, Congressman, into this conversation. Go ahead.
I want to be real clear. Medicare for all, it's like everything else. There's no one size fits all. Obviously, last night they decided their position was to get everybody on it. Medicare for all could be an opt-in. And for me, that's where I've always been. I've always been, for those who don't have health insurance, the best place to put them is in Medicare. It increases the pool. It gets the prices down, on and on and on. That's one way to do it. To require others to drop theirs, again, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that would be a very difficult pill for the American people to swallow.
So, Tom, to this Medicare, I'm sorry, Congressman, to interrupt. Tom, to this Medicare for all question, Delaney also argued that Medicare doesn't actually pay enough for that kind of approach to be financially viable for healthcare providers. Is he on to kind of a dirty secret that voters should be paying attention to, or was he overstating it with that argument?
Well, I want to make a bigger point about the Medicare problem, because this goes back to the general problem of having a field this size. Elizabeth Warren has now committed herself. Bill de Blasio can say whatever he wants. There is no chance Bill de Blasio is going to be the nominee. No chance he's going to be the president of the United States. So that's not relevant. But Elizabeth Warren, who could be the nominee and could end up in a tight race for president of the United States, has now committed herself to something that is, as Congressman Capuano just pointed out, there's a lot of people in this country who are really going to hate that. And when you try to put it under the phrase Medicare for all, a lot of people are much more comfortable with that phrase, but only because they don't really know what it means. And I think Delaney, interestingly enough, was kind of being, you know, he's a congressman. He's being very wonky. He's dealt with these issues. And he's saying, well, wait a minute, you know, Medicare doesn't, as you're pointing out, Tiziana, you know, that there's a kind of an ugly little secret underneath all of this. And the problem is that when you're trying to distinguish yourself in a pack this size, you say, okay, I'll plant the flag. You know, I'll get out there and say, yes, I will take away your private health insurance. She's not going to be able to walk that back. And that's a really dangerous thing. And I don't know, you know, if she's really committed to it, then, you know, I understand that's her position. But I think that is a lethally bad position to take, even against a candidate as weak as Donald Trump. And I think, you know, that there's going to be blowback from that, because while everybody else may forget what happened in the primary, Republican strategists were writing down every single word of what happened last night, and they're going to use all of that against the eventual nominee.
Listeners, we're talking about last night's Democratic debate with Professor Tom Nichols, former Congressman Michael Capuano, and Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church. We're going to take a short break here. Don't go away. We're going to return with more of your calls and reactions, so call in 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is WBUR's Radio Boston.
Wait a second.
Don't hit the skip button.
I mean, we know you do it.
We just wanted to take a second here because you already know how to download a podcast.
But you might have a question about some of the other technology you use, and we think we can help.
WBUR is working on a new show, and we're here to answer your tech questions, whether it's hardware-related,
software-related, social, even ethical.
Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and give us a call. Leave a message, 617-917-4717.
Give it a try, 617-917-4717.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're talking about last night's first Democratic presidential primary debate with former Massachusetts Congressman Michael Capuano, Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church, and Tom Nichols of the Harvard Extension School. And you, listeners, did the policy discussion last night between the first 10 candidates change your mind on any of the issues or the people themselves? What is the biggest issue on your mind? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Brian from Beverly has called in. Brian, what's on your mind?
So I just wanted to thank Elizabeth Warren for humbly expressing her gratitude yesterday about her opportunity to attend college in an affordable manner. And she also did it while expressing her interest in kind of extending that opportunity to others. So I felt like her representation, even though it was about her, it wasn't egotistical, and she just kind of inspired me a little bit. The rest of the debate was, you know, tolerable for the most part. And unfortunately, I don't think that we're progressive enough as a country to elect a woman candidate. But she definitely, even as a Bernie supporter, she has my support. And I just wanted to kind of use this as an opportunity to thank her for her interests in the rest of the country.
So, Brian, thanks. We have a note of appreciation from Brian for candidate Warren. Let's hear from Victor from in Providence, too. Victor, go ahead.
Hi, this is Victor from Providence, formerly of Somerville. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Victor.
My feedback was that if we have a private public health care program, we're going to polarize the country even more because the rich are going to have better health care, better access to better health care, where the poor aren't. Just like they have better access to, you know, better schools, public versus private, better cars, safer cars, better food. So I think that's my point. That's what I heard last night when they were talking about, you know, a mixed, you know, healthcare system.
So, Victor, I appreciate your comments. Your line's a little bit garbled, so I'm going to take it back from you. One of the things you said is that healthcare has great potential to polarize us. One of the other issues that has great potential and has been polarizing us recently is the question of immigration. While most of the discussion last night on immigration was pretty civil, there were some sharp exchanges. And when the moderators moved the debate into it, things got heated, especially between the Texans on the stage. Julian Castro challenged the other candidates to take some really specific steps, repealing Section 1325 to decriminalize unlawful entry, and a new Marshall Plan for key South American countries. Reverend Mariama, how would you characterize his immigration agenda, and do you think he's on the right track?
Yo debería hablar de esto en español. I said I should probably answer this question in Spanish, since everybody suddenly spoke Spanish last night. That was a little interesting point.
Wasn't
I was
it?
Like, wait, what? But I mean, I think that I thought that actually that's one of the places where Julian Castro really did break through. I think he really broke through on this question, and a question that I would guess the majority of people don't actually know about in that level of detail. And he was able to demonstrate, you know, sort of his paying attention to that level of detail. I did think that there was some waffling in some corners around where they exactly stood. You know, it was clear that he was going after Beto on that question, and I'm not sure that Beto was able to respond in
yeah,
a way
so
that...
Yeah, so we've got that, Reverend Mariama.
Okay, let's hear it.
So Castro tagged Beto O'Rourke specifically on being weak in both knowledge and specifics. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to that.
You said recently that the reason you didn't want to repeal Section 1325 was because you were concerned about human trafficking and drug trafficking. But let me tell you what. Section 18, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Title 21 and Title 22 already cover human trafficking and drug trafficking. I think that you should do your homework on this issue. If you did your homework on this issue, you would know that we should repeal this section.
So, Reverend Mariama, sounds like you think it was fair for him to go after O'Rourke.
Well,
that.
I'll just say this. I remembered it clearly. There were in a night where there were lots of conversations and lots of people, that is something that stood out. I mean, I think that the group in general seemed relatively in a similar place, and it was this question of who was willing to go out and push and who had more knowledge. And so I think that particularly Julian Castro stood out as sort of knowing this down to the nuts and bolts and able to sort of, it also seemed like a good leadership moment where he said, and I'd invite everybody on this stage to join me in this piece. He put a stake in the ground and made everyone respond back to that.
So, go ahead.
I just want to jump. I mean, look, Julian clearly did, nobody won a loss, but he clearly did the best for himself. I think amongst all of them, he actually did help himself more than anybody else did. At the same time, I don't think America is wants to elect the next lawyer in chief.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be perfect. I don't know anything about 1325. Conceptually, what he was talking about, I think most of us would agree with it in concept. But for me personally, if he hit me with it, I would have said, I need to read the section. You're right. Okay, you got me on a section of the federal code that takes up an entire bookcase. But by the way, that law has been in place for years. And the most important thing is not what the law says, but who's enforcing it. If the law has been in place for years and we weren't jailing children and beating children, then who's in the White House matters more than what's in a specific section of the federal code.
So, Tom, and if Beto had come back with that, I think he would have scored somebody in being able to.
I want to be clear. I said that Julian helped himself the most. I think Beto hurt himself the most. And part of that was lack of preparation for the ability to debate, not so much the details.
Let's let Tom Nichols jump in here, too. Go ahead, Tom.
But the problem is that the question was bait.
Yes.
And Beto.
What do you mean by baked?
Beto wasn't prepared for it. It was bait to say, yes, I will decriminalize illegal entry into the United States. And there's a couple of problems with that. First, I find myself agreeing with Michael Capuano. That law has been around forever. And if you go to any other country in the world and enter it illegally, you will be guilty of a crime. The question is, how do you enforce the penalty for that crime? And it does matter who the chief executive is and how that law is being enforced. Castro was trying to bait O'Rourke into saying, I will join you in something that I will say now that I don't think most of the country is going to support. And it did well for Castro, but it's not going to do well for the Democrats. I come at a lot of this debate. For those people out there who don't know me, I'm a disaffected, never Trump, former Republican. I worked in Democratic politics in Massachusetts. I worked for a Republican senator back in the day when there were still moderate Republican senators. If I were sitting there taking notes, I would have checked the part of checked the box on my kind of Republican strategy list of saying, good, decriminalizing illegal entry into the United States. That's all people will take. Any candidate who stands up there, as Michael just said, Section 1325, U.S. public law. The other guys are going to stand up there and say, making entry into the United States, an illegal entry into the United States, is no longer a criminal act.
Tom, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the callers are just lighting up the board, so I want to at least get another one right now. Jill from Randolph, thanks for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I thought several of the candidates were not given anywhere near enough time. Representative Kip Tabard, Jay Inslee. The only lesser candidate
was, I'm sorry, just was that Representative Tulsi Gabbard? Is that what you were saying, Jill?
Yes, okay. Sorry, yes. And she was wearing red, so she really stood out. But
Reverend Mariam's point.
And Inslee especially had a lot of interesting things to say. They literally, if you look at the timing, they got half the time.
Thanks for that call, Jill. Let's give Tulsi Gabbard a moment of attention here for a second. When the debate moved to Iran, the moderators kind of set the tone of the discussion by looking back to 2015 and the Iran nuclear deal.
Tankers have been attacked. A U.S. drone has been shot down. There have been disturbing threats issued by both the U.S. and Iranian leadership. I'd like, if you can, just for a moment to put aside how you think we may have gotten here. But what I want to know is, how do you dial it back? So a show of hands, who as president would sign on to the 2015 nuclear deal as it was originally negotiated?
So just for the record, the only person who raised their hand actually was Cory Booker. But Representative Tulsi Gabbard thought that this was would not have signed on. But Representative Tulsi Gabbard said this was the wrong place to start. We shouldn't be thinking back to 2015. She wanted to turn her attention forward and take a swipe at the administration.
Let's deal with the situation where we are, where this president and his chicken hawk cabinet have led us to the brink of war with Iran. I served in the war in Iraq, a war that took over 4,000 of my brothers and sisters in uniforms' lives. The American people need to understand that this war with Iran would be far more devastating, far more costly than anything that we ever saw in Iraq.
So, Reverend Mariama, that was a woman taking a strong shot at the administration and somebody who's had experience serving her country and on foreign policy. Did she have a strong point there? Was she critical in the right places? What was your reaction?
So I actually think she did a good job in answering that. I think where it was challenging is that foreign policy, it feels like it got just a little bit lost. And I think, to be really honest, it's a kind of issue that people look at later in the game when you're distinguishing between people. But I think she did a good job. And again, I think she was solid. And I think there were a number of people who were solid. And I do think, yes, the airtime wasn't equal. Now, with her, I think it's in part because she didn't seem to push as much. Jay Inslee definitely did push to try to get in. He just didn't make it every
time. Well, I thought the debate got interesting when de Blasio jumped in. He was the first one to jump in. I don't remember what the issue was, but he was the first one that said, wait a minute, and boom. And in a debate with 10 people, you have to do that. It gets a little messy, but if you don't do that, I actually think the first half of the debate, I think the moderators were not good. Mm-hmm. I think they did overplay with the who got the attention.
So Tom's got a de Blasio this for a second. Go ahead, Tom, jump in.
Yeah, speaking of interrupting, and by the way, I thought de Blasio's interjections were just rude and angry. And
he's a New Yorker.
But I think Gabbard, you know, Gabbard, I think the moderators fell down on the job because they let Gabbard pontificate about Iran without asking her about, you know, years of being basically an apologist for the regime in Syria. And this is the problem when you only have 60 seconds to deal with a candidate that, you know, so what do you think about Iran? She says, well, I served my country and, you know, that our policy on Iran. And I agree with her that a war with Iran would be disastrous. The problem is this is really of all the messengers on foreign policy, someone who has her history with Syria is I think, a deeply flawed messenger. But of course, nobody was going to ask her that because they had to move on to 9 other people and 12 other issues. And I think that's, again, I'm just going to keep coming back to it. This format was really ghastly for this kind of discussion.
So speaking of 60 seconds, that's about what we have left. So in a word, what's the key issue that you're each looking for tonight that you think we'll be talking about tomorrow? Very quickly, Reverend Mariama.
Well, I'm actually going to pay attention to how people are relating to each other. I think at the Biden dynamic will be interesting to see how that flows out.
And Representative Capuano?
Generally, persona. It's another introduction to a lot of people we don't know. And I think people are going to be looking. If a breakthrough moment comes, it'll be unusual and surprising to me.
And Tom?
Who can navigate this the most carefully to have the best chance of defeating Donald Trump when it's all over?
Listeners, we're going to be doing this again tomorrow with these guests, analyzing tonight's debate between another 10 Democratic candidates for president. For today, former Massachusetts Congressman Michael Capuano, now at Foley and Lardner. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Jamaica Plain. Thanks for coming in. Sorry about that. Thanks for coming in.
It's Dorchester. You were right.
Sorry. And Tom Nichols, a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and the Harvard Extension School. He's joining us from Skype today. Tom, thanks to you, too.
Thanks for having me.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, and Paris Alston. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi, and I am Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.